Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Tropft uns den Regen auf mein Kopf. Pink wie ein Deckerbus, ist die kleine Farbe im Topf. Geht mir kein Sach mit, die.
Welcome to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. I'm your host, Judy Gold, and this week we have part two of my live interview, live in-person interview with Jeannie Yachere at the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal, which was so much fun, and I love her, and you're going to love it. You're going to love it. Just some notes before we go into that interview. Notes, like we're in a class. Before we go into that interview, just want you to know I am in Provincetown still, loving it. I am here till September 3rd at the Post Office Cafe and Cabaret. And I am here Sundays and Tuesdays at 8:30 and Thursdays at 7. So that's that if you're on the Cape. And if you're taking a last minute trip to the Cape, come see me because I'm really funny. Also, I want you to know that a lot of shit happened this week. A lot of shit. I played in the mixed doubles tournament with my friend Chris Nagel at the Provincetown Tennis Club. And we have never played together, period. And we signed up together and we signed up to have fun. And we did, because we both have similar senses of humor. But I have to tell you, these tournaments, these people take this shit so seriously. You know, we love playing, but then there were people we're playing with, who all they want to do is win. I get it. I get all you want to do is win. But, like, have fun. Like, you know that I have a bad knee, and I'm not going to get the lob over my head. So why do you just keep doing it just to end the game? It's just, I don't know, it's just boring, whatever. But I love the game of tennis. I love tennis. Oh, by the way, I have terrible sciatica. I had a groin injury. This is what happened. So I took a tennis lesson with Jenny Byrne, who's fucking amazing. And we were working on footwork. And of course, I need my knee replaced really badly. So we're doing the footwork. And then at one point, my knee like snaps. And I'm like, okay, well, that happens a lot with my little patellofemoral issue. And then I, you know, I rub it and then I continue playing and then it snaps again. And I'm like, oh, shut the fuck up. And I just keep playing because I like to ignore shit. And then I came home, I iced it. I noticed that it was, you know, reacting to the snap. And I was really good all week. I iced it. I stretched. I ice heat. I did all the right stuff. I know all this stuff. Because I've had knee problems my entire life. I've been in PT so much. I know what to do. But I've never had this. So then I've recently gotten sciatica, which is so fucking annoying. And it shoots up your leg and into your ass. Mine does. It goes all the way up and then it goes into my ass glute fucking muscle. Okay. This never happened. It went and transferred to my groin. Okay. What the fuck? I've never had a groin injury. What a pain in the fuck. I would say a pain in the ass, but it's a pain in the fucking twat. I mean, it's horrible. I couldn't bend down. It's like, it's hard to cross your legs. It's like really, it was so annoying. So then I was, you know, icing and heating and heating and heating and doing stretches. And everyone's like, don't do stretches because it's whatever. So the point is that I worked out my groin muscle and it was feeling good for the tournament. And then that night, after playing 3 hours of tennis, because it's three matches, about an hour each, we're going out to dinner and I literally just turned my body and all of a sudden I felt this like ning in my ass and now my sciatica's back. So fuck it, fuck being old and fuck. And I have to get my knee replaced. So that is my really fantastic story. And I'm sure like so many people can relate because every time you say you have like sciatica or a knee problem, everyone has to tell you who their doctor is and what you're supposed to do for it, and blah, 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 blah. So that was that. What else happened this week? In the news, I don't even care. I'm at the point where I don't care, okay? And I feel like all I do is put on, if I put on the news, which I haven't been doing, I've been reading instead, it's just all the same Trump shit. He just keeps getting indicted, and now Fani Willis has even more information. And it's just like, when the fuck is this guy going to go to fucking jail? He's such a piece of shit. Okay? I just don't understand it. I don't get it. I just can't. I don't know. I just don't know. Pence is an asshole. He's like, how people vote for these people? I don't get it. I do not like Chris Christie because I think he's an asshole, but I do like what he's, you know, that he actually, you can't be from New Jersey and not fight a good fight. And I like that he's saying shit about Trump that he knows because he worked with them. So whatever. The writer strike is still going. SAG-AFTRA is still going. And I am in solidarity with them. It's not fair. And these fucking people, you know, they make billions of dollars and the creatives are treated like shit and it's not right. Okay, that's that. I want to send out a past podcast guest and all incredible human, Liz Winstead, who's fighting the fight for abortion rights, has dedicated her life to this. You know how the right always has their messaging like pro-life and it sounds positive, but we're fucking assholes and hypocrites. Well, she's calling them forced birth. And we got to start using that. We have to use the term, instead of them saying pro-life, they are forced birth. They are for forced birth. That is what they are for, forced birth. And we got to start changing the messaging, people, because otherwise those assholes are going to win the election. even though I don't really believe that deep down, but everyone keeps telling me that. So, and the other final thing that I love that I'm going to tell you before we get to Gina is that Zoom, the company Zoom, the Zoom that you use for your meetings, is making their employees go into the office. Okay? So how fucking, I don't even have to write a joke about that because that is a fucking joke. Okay? So that's that. I love you all. And I know you're going to enjoy this episode because I enjoyed it so much. What an interesting life Gina's had. So sit back, relax, and enjoy part two of my interview with Gina Yashere.
Okay, so you do that until you're 24, is that correct?
Yeah, 23, 24.
And you decide you want to go into sketch comedy. Is that correct? Or
I didn't quite decide I wanted to get into sketch comedy. So I left that job. I was in it for 4 years. I left
you
that job.
You were funny. Did you? I mean, no, you know, I always knew I was funny. Did you have this burning desire? Or?
No, I had no burning desire to do comedy because I had no idea that I could.
Right.
My mother had drummed it into my head my entire life that I had to be a doctor, lawyer, engineer, accountant. So there was no, not even an inkling of an idea that I could do right. something like this for a living. No idea whatsoever. I left Otis after 4 years. And it was in that interim I was sort of doing stuff within the because I was so angry at white people after I left Otis.
Well, obviously.
So, you know, I went through, I joined the Nation of Islam for 12 minutes. I did all the things. And at one point I was doing stuff within the community, helping stuff, doing like fundraising stuff within the black community. And there was a fundraiser and they were like, we need singers, dancers, poets. And me and a couple of friends of mine were always messing around doing our mum's accents and pretending to be our parents. So I wrote what I thought was a play. To perform a play. And I wrote this play that we performed, and it turned out it wasn't a play, it was a comedy sketch. People pissed themselves laughing throughout the whole thing. And I was like, oh, I like this. I'm funny. I've always been funny. At right. school, I was the class clown. But I was like, but that
so
was for my friends.
Your first experience with getting laughter was something that you wrote just for yourself or for other people as well?
It was just me and my friends, and I was like, let's perform this on the fundraiser because they need stuff to fill in this show.
So you your first laugh was not as a stand-up, which is...
No.
But it must have felt like...
It felt great, and I was like, I'd always been making people laugh all right. my life at school and my friends right. and stuff. So I'd always crave laughter, and I used comedy to stave off... confrontation.
Of course, it's a coping mechanism.
So when people used to come at me, I spent my whole first few years at school beating people up, fighting all the right. time. And then I discovered comedy that I could make people laugh. And if they were laughing, they weren't wanting to fight me.
Right.
And I wasn't going to keep getting thrown out of class and thrown out of school because I kept fighting. So I used comedy for a long time. So I was
Do
using
you think
it before
comedy is a more powerful weapon
Absolutely.
Than the...
Absolutely, yeah. absolutely. So I didn't. So I was a comedian before I knew I was a comedian. So I wrote this thing that was a play. We performed it. I got audiences were laughing.
Now, yeah.
you know, not just my friends. These are audiences of strangers laughing. And so we kept performing that one sketch at talent quests and talent competitions, and we kept winning. And then one day, the other two girls in my little crew did not turn up for a competition. And so I was like, well, I'm on my own. And they were like, well, do you want to go up on stage? Because if you don't, you're out of this competition. So I went up on stage and just kind of did versions of the thing by myself. Right. And people laughed and loved it. And we got through to the final
wow.
based on my performance. And then people coming up to me, and you don't need those other two girls. You're a stand-up. And I was like, stand-up? What is this? And that's how I discovered stand-up.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So you do stand up, but you get booked. You get successful. I mean, you're booked on this show. You're a regular character on the show. They keep asking you to do this Nigerian accent. you are constantly, you're putting, you know, you're working
yep.
all the time, writing yep. and doing all this stuff. And you do achieve a really decent amount of fame in
yes.
the UK.
I do.
And at this point, is your mother like still like, I want you to be an engineer? Or
Once I got, my mother came round within 6 months. So at first she was like, what is this comedy? You're leaving engineering to become a clown. This is nonsense. But then I got on this TV show within 6 months of starting comedy. I got on a talent show, which was hosted by a guy called Jonathan Ross, who was basically our Jay Leno.
Right.
So once my mum saw me, and then my mum came to the, she didn't come to the first time I was on the show. She only came when I got through to the final. She's like, I'm not coming if you're going to lose. So the first time I appeared on the show, she watched it at home. But once I got through to the final of this, then she came. And from that moment on, she's like, my daughter is on TV in front of millions of people. There must be something to this.
That I love that. Yeah. And then you get a recurring role on the Lenny Henry show.
Yes. Well, it was a sketch show. And I got brought in as a writer. And I wrote myself into the sketch show.
Right. Which we will get to because that happens yet again in your career. And you get into the comedy clubs and you're selling out. I mean, you're really
I'm doing well.
And again, you're dealing with racism in these clubs.
Absolutely. I struggled to get bookings at these clubs. It took a very long time to get these bookings. And then I'd get, you know, I'd have my white counterparts who are open for me at these clubs going on to get other stuff. And I'm like, well, can I? And it was a struggle, constant struggle.
I just interject?
Yeah. Yes.
I just want you to know, my manager's here so he can verify this. You know who used to be my opening act when I headlined at Caroline's? Jim Gaffigan. Good night, everybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I get it. You see this.
Yep.
You see this trajectory and you're like, wait, what? Oh, you're going over there? Okay. Yeah. You're welcome. But the racism is, it's just this ongoing theme in your life. So you're in these clubs and these guys are getting this, you know, great work and you're frustrated.
Yeah.
And then this really got me. You had been vying for your own to host your own sketch show.
Yes.
For all these years.
Yep.
And they give it to another black woman.
Yeah. So basically, my agent at the time was like, play the game. Whatever shows they ask you to come on for no money, just go on, play the game. Just be, you know, just be relatable. Just be non-threatening. So I'd go and I'd do all these shows and they dangle all these carrots. If you come and do this show. So basically, you know, they were like, we prefer to just book white male comics for everything. But just to make it look good, we have to put at least one woman or one black person on. So I became that person that they put on all their shows. I'd be the guest on all these different shows with all these white male comics. And so when they got criticized, they'd be like, yeah, but we've got Gina.
Right.
And I didn't like being that person that they used in that way, but my agent at the time was like, just do it.
Just take it.
Play
it's
the
work,
game.
Work, yeah.
Play the game, and then eventually they'll give you your own show because you played the game and you played nice. So I did that for years. And then when it came to the time when they were like, right, and I was like, okay, I want my own sketch show now. It's time. I've been doing this. And I've been on other people's
paid
sketch
all
shows.
Your dues.
I've done all the things. You can see that I'm constantly, consistently good. Another younger black Nigerian woman was coming through at the time because there's only room for one. It's like a nightclub policy. One in, one out. She'd come up behind me and was a sort of a younger, more feminine, prettier version of me. Because I'm look, if you look at me, I'm not the most, you know. And so
I think you're hot.
You're a lesbian, Judy. You're a lesbian.
I guess I was just young,
like I couldn't get on Comedy Central for years because I didn't fit their demo because 16 young white men 16 to 34 are not going to be masturbating to this. So this is what I've always come up against. So yeah, they'd been dangling this sketch show in front of me for years and then they gave it to this woman. And I didn't want to be angry at her.
Yeah, because, I love that you I read this about you. You're like, I don't want to be jealous.
Yeah.
But it's the system. They did it to us. Like when I was coming up in the 80s and the 90s, like they would never put more than one woman on a show.
Yeah.
We went on the road. It was one woman living in a fucking condo with these other guys. Like we never got to work together. But this was so blatantly in your another Nigerian. I mean, it's crazy.
Like,
how did you deal with that? Fuck, I would have been like,
It tore my soul apart. It was really hard because it was like, I've been doing this all these years, playing the game, and my turn finally comes.
Right.
And it was like being passed over for promotion.
Right.
That's what it felt like, that you've been in a job and you've been working and doing all the things, and then they come and they just give it to this new
kid. Another night. It's just crazy.
It was horrible.
Have you ever talked to her or?
Oh, she knew. And then what it is, they set us up against each other.
Of course.
I tried not to be that way with other black comics and other women comics. I tried to be friendly with people. But there was always that. We were like crabs in a barrel, just fighting for the crumbs. So even though I wasn't in any way negative towards her, she always kept her distance from me because she was like, I'm the chosen one. I'm not going to... Why am I...
I mean, she had to know deep down inside that you paved the way for her.
The bitch was doing some of my jokes.
Oh,
she fucking
knew.
Oh, my God,
I hate her! Fuck her! That. All right.
Hey everyone, you know what I just did? I tore, I poured, and I enjoyed a packet of Liquid IV because I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV is a major part of my life. And I just worked out with my trainer and I had a delicious lemon ginger Liquid IV. That one has a little extra, that has a little green tea in it, and so that's a little caffeinated. So I enjoy that because I needed it today. And you know, it's getting warmer out, and what does that mean? Summer. Oh God, please come. It can't come soon enough. And that means you have to hydrate. And that's what Liquid IV does. It hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. And it has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in one little stick. And that's why Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Okay? And I love it. I use it every day. Ben's basketball team uses it. It is a science-backed formula that works. It keeps you hydrated. And they have sugar-free. They have sugar-free packets in white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime. Okay? I didn't do the sugar-free. Okay. But Elisa does the sugar-free. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay hydrated because it's very, very important. And Liquid IV has been a longtime sponsor, and I love them. And they are a quality product. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to turn your turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's JUDYGOLD. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, can't even say my name, at liquidiv.com. Got it? You're welcome.
So you have had it and you move. Go to Sydney. Did you go to Sydney to go on Last Comic Standing before you moved to New York?
So what happened, I'd been dreaming of coming to America since the age of 4 because I thought your toys and candies were better. So since childhood, I've always wanted to come to America. So when I started doing comedy, I was like, well, America's the home of comedy. So I always knew I was coming to America. Whenever I came, when I was doing comedy, I'd come out to New York on vacation and just go around the clubs and just go up and just try and do sets. So I knew I was going to come to America. And Last Comic Standing was the opportunity for me. I'd never even heard of the show because it wasn't on in England. But I was doing it here at the Just for Last Festival in 2006.
And you came as a British comedian.
I came as a British comedian with the British contingent. And I remember doing a show called the Uptown Comedy Show. And it was all black comics from America. And they threw me on the show.
Well, they would never say that now. I mean, they changed the name of the ethnic show to the culture show.
But it was the Uptown. Yeah. It was the Uptown show. But it was all black comics.
Yeah.
And one comedian, her name was Roz G, they brought her up and they were like, Roz G from Last Comic Standing. And I was like, what is this show? So I looked it up, I Googled it. And it was like, oh, it's like an American Idol for comedians. So I immediately emailed my agent in England and I was like, there's this TV show out here called Last Comic Standing. I want to be the first and only British comedian to compete. They don't need to pay me, I'll fly myself out. Just let me compete on the show. Unbeknownst to me, Paige Hurwitz, I don't know if you know Paige.
Yes, Paige, who
Very Jewish.
Yes, I'm staying at her house.
Paige Hurwitz was a producer on Last Comic Standing, and she'd been in London a few months before and had seen me crush at the Comedy Store in London and had already gone back and gone, there's this woman called Gina Yashaway. She needs to be on the show. So the universe was turning. And that was the first year they decided to go internationally and find comedians from all over the world. I happened to be in Sydney, Australia on tour when they came to Sydney, so I auditioned there.
Oh, perfect.
And got onto the show there. So for the first 3 years I was in America, everybody thought I was Australian anyway because I'd come through Sydney. And that got me a work visa to work in America. And they got me a 2-year work visa. So I went back to England during the gap in filming, put my house on the market, sold and gave away everything I owned, threw a big party and said, I'm going to America. And people were like, you're crazy. You've only got a visa. You're gonna have to come back. And I was like, trust me, I'm never fucking coming back to this godforsaken place.
Wow. And what did your mother say?
She was not happy that I was leaving
because
all she'd seen of America is guns and murder. Mm-hmm. She was like, they will kill you there. And I'm like, it's okay, Mom. I'll be fine. So, you know, as she left, she was like, okay, be careful. You know, you have an elderly mother. That was her last words to me.
God.
Like, you have an elderly mother.
Times a thousand. You're the first Brit on Def Comedy Jam?
The only Brit on Def Comedy
Jam.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You operated a psychic booth in 2009?
On the Jay Leno show.
On the Jay Leno show.
Yes.
And would you write the...
I'd write all of it, yes. Yeah.
And you work consistently. The comparison between the racism... Like, when do you realize, you know, the racist in the United States as well... But when did you sort of understand the difference is between the racism in the United States versus the racism in the UK?
I mean, I've always known it because we had all your movies.
Right.
I read your books. We knew all your historical figures. So I knew way more about America before I got here. So people go, was it a culture shock moving to the States? And I'm like, no, because I knew everything about you before I came because we've consumed all of your movies, TV, everything, you know? So I knew the difference between the racism here. You know, I had a slightly different experience because as a black person from England in America, I'd get profiled by the police in America. But then as soon as I opened my mouth and they'd hear the accent, they'd be like,
oh, she's royalty.
Yeah, they'd be like, oh, you're not one of our blacks.
Right.
It confused the fuck out of them.
Wow. Yeah. Do you think there's... a vast difference between the kind of racism? I mean, the racism in the UK is so much older than...
Oh, there is no difference. The English are just smarter at it. You know,
But it's a construct in the United States. They created it.
No, the Brits created it.
Right, I'm saying we are newer at it.
Yes.
And really dumb, you know?
The Brits, I say the European, this is the analogy I use. When it comes to slavery, Americans did the equivalent of stealing people's things and keeping it in their own home. Whereas the Brits did it the other way. They stole shit and kept it in somebody else's house.
Right.
So Americans stole black people from Africa, but brought it to America on American soil in full view of American society. So black people's history in America is intertwined with the whole making of the country.
Making of the country. And, you know, fuck Ron fucking Santa.
Exactly.
Who's saying they had skills. They had those skills before they came over there.
They just fucking stole it from us.
And then we took them.
Exactly.
And had them build. I know.
Exactly.
It's so infuriating.
Well, what the Brits did was they stole black people from Africa, but didn't bring them to England.
Right.
They put them on colonies in the Caribbean. You got Jamaica and Barbados, right. And the Belgians did it. The Dutch did it. This is why you've got African countries that speak French and
it also. You talked about before the racism among the black communities that they had created this situation.
Well, it's not racism. It is basically self-hate.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it racism. That racism can only be perpetuated by white people who've created it.
Right.
But the hatred of the black people, we were taught to hate each other. From the darker skinned black people had to work in the fields, and the lighter skinned people got to work in the, and the closer the proximity to whiteness, the lighter your skin was, the straighter your hair was, your proximity to whiteness afforded you more privilege. This is stuff that has been bred into us for hundreds of years, and it's even now. You know, there is still a preference for lighter-skinned black people. In Hollywood, black women who tend to do well are women that look like Halle Berry, the right. proximity to whiteness. So this is a thing that is... Even people go, oh, move on, it's over, it's in the past. It's not in the past.
Oh, please. Are you,
it's not in no, the past. It's hello. In our present.
It's in our faces.
The fact that they're trying to turn the clock back and trying to tell black people that slavery was beneficial for
oh,
us.
Oh, God, I can't.
It's fucking laughable if it wasn't so obscene, you know?
It's disgusting. Okay. Okay, so you're very successful. You get on Showtime.
I do all right. I didn't get on Showtime.
I made my own special. On Showtime.
I made my own special. Showtime did not give me a special.
Right.
None of them would give me a special. So I rented a theater. I sold the tickets. I pounded the pavement, giving out flyers. I filled up that theater. I booked my own film crew.
Right.
I shot my own special. I edited my own special. And then I gave it to my manager, Jody Lieberman. Hello, Jody.
Yay, Jody Lieberman.
Jewish.
Wow, that's so unusual.
And
Jody
took it to Showtime and Showtime got it. So they didn't give me a special.
Right. And this has since become the model now, unless yeah. you're, you know,
I was doing it before Louis C.K. Right. did it. I was doing it before.
Yes.
But he was a white dude and he got a lot more. But I did it several years before yes. he did it and monetized
yes.
it.
Yes, many years ago. You become the British correspondent for The Daily Show.
I say that, they use me 3 fucking times in a year.
Yeah.
Again, I was being cock-blocked by somebody within the show who didn't really want me on the show. They had their way of doing things and I was not it. Because I was on the show because Trevor and myself had been meeting all over the world doing shows and we bonded on being outsiders in America. So it was him that called me directly and said, I'd like you to come and do some work on my show. They didn't want me. So when I came on the show, it was a struggle getting my stories on the show. So I was on the show for a year, but they only used me 3 times.
Wow.
And that was because the producers didn't actually want me.
So fucking unbelievable. You did not come out of Le Closet. Le Armoire. Until you moved to the United States.
That's right.
And you said that you then became an open book, and your comedy got better.
Absolutely.
Let's return to your mother finding out her daughter's a lesbo.
I told her years ago before I came to America. So I think she knew deep down in her soul. I'll tell you why.
I'm a mother, you know.
You know.
And I've wanted my kids to be gay. And it's not worked at all. They're both fucking straight. And I am going to be laying in urine and feces at the Hebrew Home for the Aged. With chin hair.
But yeah, okay. I came out of the womb wearing a tool belt. Like I...
Hebrew Home, I forgot. Sorry.
Yeah, I was a tomboy as a kid. I came out I was never super feminine as a kid. I hated wearing dresses.
Same.
So my mum, it was a tomboy. By then,
can't say that anymore, right?
You're a tomboy.
Yeah.
So I was a tomboy. You know, I wanted to be with the boys. I hung out with them. So I'd always been that way. And as a kid, I remember when I used to love to read and I read newspapers when I was 6, 7. And I remember seeing the word lesbian in newspaper. And my mother always used to say, stay away from boys. You will be a doctor, then you will get married, and then you'll have children. But up until you become a doctor, stay away from boys. There you go. So when I was 6, I remember seeing and reading a newspaper, and the word lesbian was in this newspaper.
And it hit you.
And it was like, I didn't know I was a lesbian right. at the time. But it was like lesbians, women who like women and don't like men. It was basically, that was the definition. So I remember thinking, oh, mum wants us to be lesbians because she's always telling us to stay away from boys.
Right.
So I remember going to my older sister when I was 6 going, mum, obviously mummy wants us to be lesbians because she wants us to stay away from boys. And my sister, who's 8 years older than me, was like, I don't think that's what it means. So that was, you know, that was logic to me.
Right.
So later on, I'm lesbian. I'm out to my friends. My brothers know because one of my brothers used to hang out with a girl who was lesbian. And before I came out to my brothers, well, I didn't have to come out to my brothers because one of these, the lesbian who my brother was hanging out with kept going, I saw your sister at the club.
Wow.
I saw your sister. So he knew and he was like, whatever, I don't give a shit.
Right.
So my brothers knew. And then my mother just kept going on, when are you going to get married and have children? And then one day I just went, I'm a lesbian. Jesus. And that's basically how
and
I came.
And that was it?
And she was shocked. She was kind of stopped dead in her track because I literally just blurted it out. I didn't sit her down and go, okay, this
right,
is...
Right, I have to I just went,
I'm not going to get married and have kids. I'm a lesbian. And she was shocked. And then she says, what is this lesbian? What is this lesbian? What is this? And she didn't say much, but she went and complained to my younger brother and was like, I don't know what is happening. This is... The... But we never talked about it.
Wow.
We never talked about it for years. For years, we didn't talk about it. Like, I bring girlfriends over and she'd know that that was my girlfriend. Right. She goes, so your friend?
Yeah, my this, yeah.
Your friend.
My roommate. Friend.
Yeah,
your my friend. Roommate and I had a baby, yeah. By the way. That was my first album, Judith's Roommate Had a Baby.
She never truly acknowledged my girlfriend until Nina came along. And that's because Nina Rose Fisher, Jewish, played it so well. So when Nina first met my mum, in Nigerian culture, when you meet an elder, a Nigerian elder, you kind of bow before them. And I didn't tell Nina to do that because I never used to do it as a kid because I'm British. I never did the whole bowing thing. But when Nina met my mum, she got down on her knees and was like, hello, and treated my mother like royalty. And my mother fell in love with her fucking instantly. All we had to do was play to her ego.
Nobody
knew.
I know what to do when I meet your mother.
Yeah.
Except if I bow down, someone's going to have to fucking pick me up because I can't get up. By the way, Nina, I just love this. Professor of social justice.
Yes.
Parents were, whatchamacallit, they protested against the KKK.
Yes.
Total. Yes. And a Jew.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
Gina, you did it.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Okay, so now you're in LA, you're in a relationship.
Yeah.
And Chuck Lorre is looking to do a Nigerian sitcom, right?
Yeah.
And he says to you, he looks up, he Googles.
They Google Nigerian female
comedians. And thank God that fucking cunt from that took your...
they saw her.
They
saw all of them. There's a few of us out there. I was one of the first, but there's a few of us out there. But I was obviously by far the best.
Of course. And the smartest.
Yes.
And he says, we're three white guys. We need you to help us.
Yes.
And you're like, no. And then your brother and Nina are like,
brother and Lila. My best friend Lila.
Is Lila Jewish?
No, she's black, Jamaican.
All right.
Sorry.
We have a Lila in our family, so I thought maybe. Okay. They say to you, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yes.
Did Jody Lieberman also say that?
Oh, yeah. Jody and Conan, my agent, were furious with me. They didn't show... Conan's here. Hey, Conan.
I love Conan Smith. Roland Smith's son.
They were like, well, you know, but because they work for me, they can't go, you're a fucking idiot. They just went, Gina, think about it. I think you should think about it.
Right.
Whereas my brother and Lila can go, you're a fucking idiot.
Okay. Yeah. So you meet with them.
Yeah.
You're giving them pointers. Within a week, you become co-creator, writer, an executive producer.
I don't become executive producer straight away. I become executive producer later on in the seasons. But yeah, so originally they just wanted me as a consultant.
Right.
And once I got in the room and started pitching and creating the stories for them, then Chuck, you know, they called my agents back and go, forget this consultant thing. Chuck just wanted her as a consultant because he didn't know whether he'd like her or not. And he cannot, he does not suffer fools gladly, right. Chuck Lorre. So they wanted me as a consultant. So if they didn't like me, they can just pay me and go, thanks for that, goodbye. But once I got in the room, Chuck was like, I like her. She's smart. She's funny. She knows what she's doing. We can't do this show without her. So then they called my agent back and went, forget the consultant thing. She's going to be a co-creator and producer on the show. So that's what happens.
Okay. But brilliant Gina Yashere says, oh, I think I'll write myself in the script.
Absolutely.
And not as the star, as the best friend.
Yes.
And now you become star. You are now EP star, yes, and co-creator.
Showrunner. And now a showrunner. Yeah.
Of iHeart.
Bob Hart's Abishola.
Oh, sorry. iHeart. I was thinking iHeart. And let me tell you something. When I was in college, the head of my dorm was Abishola.
Ah, oh, there you go.
And I loved her. and my friend Howard and I talk about her all the time. She was the greatest. She was the head of our whole dormitory. But anyway, I mean, are you pinching yourself every day?
Absolutely.
Do you fucking realize you're set for life, Gina?
I'm not set for life. I'll tell you why I'm not set for life.
Why?
If this show had been made 10 years ago,
true,
I'd be set for life.
Right,
which is
why we're striking.
Exactly.
And they're making a shitload of money off of this show.
Yes, but I've definitely made more money than I've ever made in my entire life, and which is great. So, but here's the thing. I'm a black woman in this industry.
Yeah.
I don't take it for granted. I save my money. I mean, I'm having fun with the money. I like to eat good food and travel
right,
the world.
Of course.
I'm living a wonderful life. Me and Nina are very happy. But I treat this as if it's the only TV show that I'm ever going
and
to
And that
get.
Is, I say that to people all the time.
Yeah.
I talk about it with Rick, my manager, all the time. Like, do these people realize, you know, this is not going to be like this forever, you know?
Exactly.
There's so many ups and downs. But, you know, you deserve it, you know? And
I do. Thank you, yeah, Judy. I do.
You do deserve
it. I absolutely
it.
Do.
And it's just, I mean, for me, who would do anything to be in the position you're in now, just knowing the struggle and that, you know, I believe representation is everything. And the fact that these little Nigerian kids are being able to go on, turn on their
CBS
TV and see these people on a network and then know you as a lesbian. I mean,
yeah,
it's amazing. And it's, I love it. I love
thank
it.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I'm sure your representatives love it as well, 10%.
Oh, yes.
So
we're all making money.
You, in 2005, realized you had lupus.
Yes.
And were put on all this medication and then decided to, I mean, this is just another example of you taking control of your life.
Yes.
You're like, well, fuck this shit. You get off gluten, meat, and
I went raw vegan.
Sugar. You went raw vegan.
So yeah, I got diagnosed with lupus. I was very sick for a few years where I had very bad arthritis, almost, you know, when you get rheumatoid arthritis.
Yeah, I have it really bad.
And your joints start to get, I started to get that. I'd get,
right,
at one point, I couldn't lift my arms above my head. I had to have raised toilet seats because my knees, I couldn't sit down.
I need that.
It was very bad at one point, and I was fast moving towards canes and then wheelchair. And they had me on all kinds of drugs, steroids, immune suppressants, all of that kind of stuff. And I was just getting sicker and sicker and sicker. And I was like, this cannot be it. You know, I wasn't born with lupus. This must be environmental in some way. I've got to figure out a way. And I started researching how to treat myself without medication. And I discovered, you know, the food is medicine, basically. And I started getting into the whole alkaline living, drinking water, cutting out foods that are acidic, that destroy your body from the inside. So I went to Thailand and did a detox for a week where you fast for 7 days.
Oh, fuck that shit.
Yeah, and do... Listen, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Fast for 7 days, do coffee enemas twice a day. And at that point...
What the fuck are you doing? You didn't eat anything for 7 days?
Let me finish.
Okay, sorry.
Listen.
Fuck,
but you're full of liquids.
Fucking days.
Listen, the hunger is all in your mind. When you're drinking lots of liquids and you... The first 3 days, you get past that need to chew something. If you're drinking lots, you're lots of fluids, lots of... I lost 13 pounds in a week.
Oh, I gotta go do that.
Right? And I came back and I changed my diet. I went raw vegan. So I stopped eating meat. Because American meat is disgusting. They pump it full of chemicals. The way the animals are treated, the hormones that are in the meat, it's so terrible. If you're gonna eat meat, at least eat... I eat meat again now, but I eat only 100% organic.
And kosher, actually. They have different laws, yeah.
Exactly. And the meat that you guys eat in America would never be allowed in England, put it that way. So anyway, I went raw vegan for about nearly 2 years. Cut out meat, dairy, sugar, gluten. And within a month of eating that way, I was able to throw away my raised toilet seat. I came off all my medication. My doctors were like,
"You have your raised toilet.
You can't." I thought, "You don't need it. You need to do what I'm doing." So I came off all the medication. The doctors told me I was crazy. I was like, "Well, this is my body, and I've been doing it your way for years, and I've been getting sicker and sicker. And every time I go back to my appointments, I see the same people dying slowly." And I was like, "I'm not going to become one of those people." So I came off all the medication, and my body went into remission within months.
Crazy.
Within months.
And you've been like that since?
Since 2009, I've not taken a single drug for my lupus.
I got to do that because I have the worst arthritis.
I'm telling you, sugar, meat, if you cut out sugar, meat, dairy.
Oh, God, I can't.
For a month. Just do it for a month, Judy. You'll see the difference.
And then do I have to do it for the rest of my life?
No, I eat organic. I eat meat now. I eat meat, but I try and eat as much vegetables as I can with the meat. Sugar is my drug. I'm a massive sugar junkie. But when I eat too much sugar, my body tells me. I'll start waking up and I'll wake up in the morning and I can't open my hands. And I go, oh, I've been eating too much sugar. And then I quickly go back and start eating clean again. And my body goes, all right, fine. So my body tells me when I'm eating really badly.
Also, and you know. FYI, Gina has been drunk twice in her life.
Yes.
And on a lesbian cruise. Well, that figures. I would fucking get drunk and throw myself overboard. Anyway, all right. So we're ending soon, but I always ask my podcast guests two questions. And by the way, Gina, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're just an inspiration and you're a class act. And I love hanging with you at the cellar and I just love,
thank you.
I just love strong women and I love your mother. Okay. So here's the two questions I ask. What do you do for your mental health? We're a pro mental health podcast.
I meditate now. I meditate.
Same.
I discovered
what kind?
Transcendental meditation.
I want to do that, but the fucking guy who's the head of it, he's like, oh, I'll meet with you and I'll give you a mantra. And they do
courses. I paid for the course. I went and did the course.
Where? In New York?
I did it in New York, yeah. They do courses
everywhere.
Yeah,
but it's like thousands of dollars to get a fucking mantra.
Well, you pay what you can afford. At the time, I couldn't afford it, so I only paid $500.
But they should give you a goddamn mantra. Do you like it?
I love it. Because I don't like meditation when they're talking to you. I don't want anybody going, imagine walking through.
I don't,
shut the fuck up, stop talking to me.
Yeah.
So that I don't like those guided,
you're in the field. When did you start doing that?
In 2018.
And then you got your show.
Yeah. Listen.
I have it.
I'm
telling
you
what I'm doing. Okay.
I just sit there and I'm not good at meditation. My brain is like this all the time.
Yeah, same.
So I couldn't meditate for years because I was like, you're supposed to sit and be in.
And
I'll sit there. Like, I can meditate and the whole meditation could be about the last episode of Game of Thrones. It doesn't matter. Just let your brain go where it goes. And sometimes you just let it go. And sometimes my brain will go, oh, I'm meditating. This is good. Oh, really? This is fantastic. Right. And I'll just start having a conversation with myself.
Yeah.
But I've learned to just let my brain do what it does. And even when it's talking to itself, there's a level of relaxation.
Right.
And I've had good inspiration for jokes, for show ideas, right, come to me while I'm meditating. So I do that. I love that. I do that as often as I can, at least once a day. So I meditate. I like to eat good food. I love to travel. I live somewhere quiet and peaceful now. Right. So I'm in LA, but I'm in Altadena, which is outside of LA. So in the morning, it's just bird song.
Yeah,
at
we
night,
see
it's
on
crickets.
Instagram. Okay, annoying.
peace. That's how I have my peace.
The podcast, of course, is called Kill Me Now because I don't know if you know, get annoyed at everything.
No, really?
Yeah, and I try to hide it. So I love to know what pisses you off more than, and it can be any little thing. What makes you fucking so mad you can't deal with it?
Oh, so many things. So many things. I do not like passive-aggressive people.
Oh,
I do not like people that perseverate over things for too long. Like, the reason why me and Nina get on so long is if something pisses her off, she says it immediately and we have it out and it's great. I used to have girlfriends that would, I'd say a flippant comment that's throwaway and they'd hold on to it for weeks and then right. they'd go, you know, there was something that you said in the winter of 2017 that really hurt my, and I'm like, bitch, why didn't you say it then?
I know. And they hold on to it and they're like so cunty and you're like, what's wrong? And it's like 3 weeks ago, you said it. I'm like, I cannot,
I'm not, just say it in the moment, we'll have it out and we move
get
on.
It over with.
Like me and Nina will be upset with each other about something and we'll be like, ah! And then 10 minutes later, we're like, what do you want for lunch? Do you want? And we just, it's over. And I love that we don't hold on to stuff.
Yeah, Elisa likes to draw it out.
Yeah, none of
and
that.
And yeah, no.
Nope.
And now she's going to yell at me. But she's the greatest. I love her so much.
So yeah, I hate.
I can't thank you enough.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you all for coming.
Thanks for coming.
Have fun at the festival.
Yay.
Thank you so much for listening to part two of my interview with Jeannie Yashere at the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival this past month in Montreal. Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling, and everything else, as you know, done by Brittany Joe Sowards Richmond. What do I have to tell you? Okay, follow me on, things are going on Twitter, but I'm not really checking my Twitter because I hate it. I hate that fucking X. I liked the bird. It was friendly. The tweet. I fucking hate it. I hate Elon Musk. I fucking hate that whole platform. So I'm Instagramming it most of the time and I have to get into Threads. But you know what? Part of me's just like, I can't do this anymore. But I do enjoy the Instagram. Again, if you're going to be on Cape Cod, please come see me at the Post Office Cafe and Cabaret in Provincetown, Massachusetts. Okay? Also upcoming, I have, let me tell you right now, I have Arlington Draft House in Arlington, Virginia, 22nd and 23rd of September. I'm going to Sweden for a book fair. You know, I have other gigs. With Sunshine Cathedral in Florida on the 21st of October. So I will be doing gigs, but I'm probably going to try to get my knee replaced at some point. Also, I want you to know that I am probably going to be featured in the New York Times within the next couple of weeks. They did a piece on how she spends her Sundays, which is in the Metro section, but you can get it online. And they followed us around. And I'm excited. I think it's going to be a fun article. So I don't even want to say that because I don't know if it's going to happen. I thought it was going to come out this week and it didn't come out. And my whole life is always like, oh, I'm doing this. That's why I never tell anyone anything I'm doing, because 90% of the time, it doesn't happen the way it's supposed to happen. So you can plan all you want, but that's just, to me, a plan is just a hope and a dream. Okay? So what else? I hope everyone's enjoying their summer. I can't believe it's almost over. I fucking love summer, and I can't believe it's almost over, and I don't want it to be over, but I do think September's going to be warm. You know, climate change. So anyway, that's all I have to say. I love you all for listening. I love people who tell me at my shows that they listen to my podcast. I love all the notes you send me. I love you. I really do. I think you're the greatest, and I can't believe I've been doing this podcast for so long, but look, maybe I'm addicted. Okay? Thank you, everyone, for your love and support. I love you back, as I just said. And all right, I'm going to go night-night because I'm recording this before I go to sleep. And I hope I better get a good sleep score. That's all I have to say. So I hope you all get good sleep scores this week and that you have a wonderful week. And as we always say, so long.